The Occupy Wall Street protests have started a national conversation about how capitalism should work. But for all of the talk about the problems with our financial system, it seems like few workable solutions have actually emerged. After several large bank bailouts, many people feel powerless. But others are taking action to get that power back.
Can you tell me what you're doing?
I'm painting a giant foreclosure sign that we're going to be putting up on the big banks throughout San Francisco to symbolically close them. It says, move your money.
KALW's Charlie Mintz recently talked with some San Franciscans about this very issue. Mintz was in Justin Herman Plaza on November 5th, what was called Bank Transfer Day, an online campaign to remove money from corporate banks and open accounts at credit unions.
I did it yesterday. My sense of the influence of money in government and power and all the issues of who is controlling the means, you know.
According to a survey by the Credit Union National Association, 650,000 people moved their money in the 4 weeks leading up to Bank Transfer Day, moving an estimated $4.5 billion. The American Bankers Association contests those figures, and no one will know for sure until official numbers are released in February. But there's no doubt many people are making the switch.
Jesus kicked the moneylenders out of the temple for doing what our banks do, and he wasn't particularly peaceful about it. So, as I always like to say, we're being more nonviolent than Jesus, but we need to get the bankers the hell out of running our country.
So what will the impact of this exodus be? Charlie Mintz has some answers.
To understand the impact of Bank Transfer Day, you need to know some things about banks, and you need to know some things about credit unions. So I talked to someone who knows about both.
My name is Daryl Duffy.
Duffy's a professor of economics at Stanford, and he can tell us a lot about the big banks.
They are darned big.
Darned big.
They can be up to $2 trillion or so dollars of loans in their portfolio, which is enormous.
Altogether, the four largest banks, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase, Citibank, and Bank of America, have about $7 trillion of loans on their balance sheets. That's roughly half the size of the national GDP. Now let's compare that to the size of credit unions.
Well, credit unions are essentially small banks that have a limited set of things that they do.
Because they're non-profit, credit unions are exempt from income taxes. Banks argue that gives them an unfair competitive advantage. So, in response, Congress has limited the amount credit unions can lend out to just 12.5% of their assets.
More or less, they're limited to simple retail deposit-taking, loans for cars, homes, and small businesses.
Banks have no such requirement. They can lend out as much as they want, provided they keep 10% of their deposits on reserve. So, in theory, they can keep growing indefinitely. Meanwhile, the credit union's loan cap keeps them small and makes it harder for them to hold their own.
What we have in the U.S. is a two-tiered system where we've got a number of very large banks.
That's James Kahn, a professor of economics at Yeshiva University in New York.
The large banks have been getting bigger, and the small banks have been kind of disappearing or being absorbed into larger institutions.
Kahn's talking small, for-profit banks. But the same thing can happen to credit unions. Our four biggest banks hold more than $4 trillion in deposits. That's 44% of all the deposits in the country. Meanwhile, the 7,400 credit unions have got around $1 trillion in deposits combined, less than 10% of the country's total. So even when people move about $5 billion out of big banks and into credit unions, Stanford's Daryl Duffy says it probably doesn't much matter.
$5 billion is an enormous amount of money for you or me, but for the large banks, it's not something they would like to see happen. It's not going to take them down.
This isn't just Duffy's opinion. Every economist I spoke with was in agreement on this issue. The big banks just control too much of the country's total deposits.
The too big to fail is still an issue.
Economist James Kahn says even a few million people moving their money wouldn't make much of a difference.
That's going to require more of a political solution.
So deposits, especially relatively small ones, aren't really that important to these banks. In fact, they might not even want them. Daryl Duffy.
It happens that we're at a time right now when the large banks actually don't have a great as much benefit as they did in the past of having a lot of deposits because they're flush with cash.
Banks are flush with cash for two reasons. One is that the federal government stepped in big time during the 2008 financial crisis. The Troubled Asset Relief Program, known as TARP, basically bought bad assets directly from the banks to the tune of around $700 billion. On top of that, the Federal Reserve pumped trillions of additional dollars into the banks. This helped them stay in business, but it didn't do anything for their second problem, lack of demand.
The money is just sitting there.
James Kahn says banks used to earn profits by paying a certain amount to borrow money from customers, then loaning it back out at higher interest rates.
You know, in the boom years of the 90s, or even first part of the last decade, you know, the money was going out as fast as it came in.
Two factors have dried up loans. One, the recession has meant businesses are asking for fewer loans. Two, after days of easy lending leading up to the financial crisis, banks are being a lot stricter with who they'll loan money to. So since they're no longer using those deposits, big banks are okay letting small customers go.
For smaller deposits, you know, the larger institutions don't even care that much because they tend to make more money on the larger deposits anyway. It's kind of win-win because the larger institutions don't really value them that much.
A win-win, except for one wrinkle. While it's true that small deposits are generally unprofitable for banks, those accounts make the banks money in other ways.
Fees.
Rebecca Bourne is an analyst at the Center for Responsible Lending, a national bank watchdog group.
Fees play a significant role in the profitability of banks, and they've really played an increasing role over the last several years, I think, as banks have been squeezed more on interest rate spreads.
The spread is the difference between what banks pay for money and what they charge to loan it out. With interest rates at historic lows,
over the last decade or so,
banks increasingly rely on fees.
Back-end, what we call back-end or hidden fees that tend to be not transparent and tend to have a significant disproportionate impact on checking account customers who are most struggling financially.
In 2009, the Federal Reserve changed the rules on overdraft fees. So now customers have to opt in. This is supposed to hurt bank revenue, but it's not clear yet if that's happening. Data from the Sunlight Foundation shows it has. Revenues from fees are actually down from 2009. To compensate, the banks have tried introducing other fees, but that hasn't gone over so well.
The $5 debit fee originally proposed by Bank of America is dead in the water. Just over a month after it was proposed by the bank and met with the ire of everybody ranging to consumer groups, congressmen, even President Obama. Now, last week, we brought you the news that Wells Fargo and JP Morgan Chase announced that they would be abandoning their plans for the $5 debit fee.
One last reason the big banks might actually care about their masses of departing customers? Publicity. There was an economic reality behind the bailouts. The big banks controlled too much money to just collapse. But there was a political reality, too. Banks like Bank of America and Wells Fargo used to have an image as America's banks. That's starting to change. And with every switch to a credit union, it changes a little more. For Cross Currents, I'm Charlie Mintz.